Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time. FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby. Come on.
Jail Talk. Before I get started, I want the audience out there listening to know the reasoning behind Jail Talk. This show is about conversations related to what's taking place with the prison system, the effects that it has on all parties impacted by the system, such as those who are survivors of violence, individuals incarcerated, families, and communities. My goal is bringing more awareness to the side effects of prison and helping those who aren't aware to become educated, because this can happen to anyone. On today's show, I have a really good friend of mine named Robert Salim Holbrooks, who is the executive director of Abolitionist Law Center, a law project dedicated to ending race and class-based discrimination and the criminal justice system and all forms of state violence. So first, I want to welcome you, Salim.
Thank you, Christina, for having me on your show.
And, you know, I just want you to tell the audience out there, you know, listening, what brought you into this work of abolition?
Yeah, I mean, what brought me into the work of abolition is being 16 years old and arrested for being involved in a drug-related homicide, facing the death sentence, and then ultimately being sentenced to life without parole, being sentenced by a judge who, when he sentenced me, found that I didn't know the victim was going to be killed. I didn't strike the victim. I wasn't involved in the planning of the robbery or the murder of the victim, but because I stayed downstairs in the house that the victim was killed at, that justified me being sentenced to spend the rest of my life in prison. So I come to abolition as someone who went into this prison system at the age of 16, served 27 years in prison fighting for my freedom, fighting for the freedom of other prisoners, fighting for our dignity, fighting to be treated with dignity and respect, fighting for our human rights to be respected. That's what brings me to abolition, from my lived experience with this system that disproportionately impacts Black and Brown communities, poor people, and is a system that is unjust and a system that needs to be abolished, because it's not bringing our communities any safety. And it's also destroying and tearing families apart. So for me, my entry to abolition was being impacted by the system that we're fighting against, particularly as a child, and coming of age within the prison system and just seeing how brutal it is, seeing how ineffective it is, and seeing how it does nothing to make our communities better, or even the people that are trapped up in it.
So I have a question just off of some of the things that you're saying. How did it feel being first a youth juvenile that was sentenced to go to prison. And the other question that I have is, you came home during the youth resentencing, correct?
Yes.
So how was that for a young man at the age of 16, like, going into the prison system? And then not only that, but not being involved in what took place with someone being murdered.
Yeah. Well, let me just say this. I was involved in the homicide. Like, I had to, like, really come to terms with the fact that, yeah, I did participate in it. It's just that my role in it was just being a lookout. And I like to tell, when people ask me, like, yo, what happened? And I'm like, look, I was 16 years old. My co-defendants were adults. The decision to what happened that night was above my pay grade, right? My only role that night was just to stand at a door, keeping lookout. What happened upstairs, what was particularly going on inside, was completely out of my control. But as a man, I do have to take responsibilities that I was involved in a horrific offense that took the life of someone from my community. And I certainly needed to be held accountable for it. So I never ran from accountability. I knew I had to be held accountable for my role in that horrible offense that snatched somebody from my neighborhood, right? But going into the system and being sentenced to life without parole at the age of 16, you know, you got to imagine that, you know. And I look back now, like, people ask me, like, what were you thinking? Were you scared going upstate? No, I wasn't, only because I was so young, I really didn't really know what I was stepping into, right? So there wasn't a sense of fear necessarily. It was more like I was just detached. I was like out of my body. But once I entered the prison system and saw what was going on around me, saw not just the abuses committed by the state, by guards, by the system, but also just the environment that prison is, unfortunately, where you have a lot of people who are just already dealing with trauma, already dealing with harm in their personal lives, and now you're packed in on top of each other. It was a very explosive environment, and being a kid in that environment, it was basically a swim or sink moment where you had to hit the ground running. And so for many of us who came in kids, we really had to come in with chips on our shoulders. And I like to tell people, we had to kind of like kill a part of ourselves, because you had to be hyper aggressive. You had to be just really like honed in on your animal instincts in that environment. So it was definitely something that even to this day, I'm still recovering from, in terms of just recapturing that humanity within me that I had to, for a while, extinguish inside of prison. But then the other side of that is that I was very fortunate in that when I went into prison at a young age, when I went into solitary confinement units because we were getting in so much trouble, I met political prisoners. And these political prisoners created a safe space for younger kids coming into the system, so that we can grow as men in the prison system. And it was really a key part of who I am today, because, you know, we were all these young guys talking about, yeah, we're riding for our neighborhood. You know, I'm in here for putting in work for my neighborhood. But in reality, we were harming our neighborhood. So meeting political prisoners like Russell Maroon Schultz, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Joseph Jojo Bowens, these men were in prison for actually defending their community, riding for their community. They were in prison for serving the community, right? And so when we learned their history, when we learned the history of the Black Liberation Army, the Black Panther Party, who were feeding the community, making our neighborhoods a safer place to be, that was really impactful in us deciding to turn our lives around, right? So I was really fortunate that I was mentored by these men in prison. Because had I not been mentored by them, then there's no doubt, even though I was very fortunate that an opportunity for me to be released was opened by the United States Supreme Court in 2012, ruling that children cannot be sentenced to mandatory life without parole sentences. Had I not made that decision to turn my life around, I would have accumulated so much more extra prison sentencing, right? By cutting up, continuing to cut up in prison, that when the opening came, I wouldn't have been able to take advantage of it because I would have threw it away by throwing my life away in that prison environment.
Wow. I had a question for you. What do you think? What is your opinion of the fact that you received such a harsh sentence just for being an accomplice?
Because of mandatory sentencing. That's what the judge said. The judge basically was like, look, I can't consider your age. I can't consider your background. The law requires me to sentence you to life without parole, period. And that's not just my case, because I'm not unique. That's the case of thousands of other people serving life without parole sentences. It doesn't allow the judge to have the discretion to sentence you to something that is proportionate to your actual role in the offense. So it's just an assembly line to send people into prisons.
How many people were able to come home during the youth resentencing in Pennsylvania? Are you aware of that?
So Pennsylvania had over 500 people who were serving life without parole sentences for offenses that they committed as children, as juveniles. To date, out of that 500, I believe more than half have been released and the other half have been resentenced and are waiting release, or have been sentenced to a term of years until they're released. But then also some, unfortunately, have been resentenced to life without parole. So, but as it stands right now, out of that 500, more than half, I think it's like close to 300, the numbers.
Wow, that's just a small amount, in my opinion, of people coming home from 500 to the amount of the population we currently have in the system right now. What was your support system like being incarcerated when it came to like your family, friends? Like, how were you able to kind of maneuver and have different resources? Because it's hard being in prison when you don't have that support or having someone to advocate for you that's out here.
I was very fortunate that I had a family that really, look, I have had a family, a very large family. We weren't a rich family. We weren't a poor family. We were a working class family, right? And we were dealing with a lot of the issues that families deal who live in black and brown neighborhoods, right? But at the same time, I had a family that's very supportive of one another. So my mother was supporting me. My sister was supporting me. My aunt was supporting me. My nephew was supporting me. So I had a really strong support system around me that became my advocates. So they would go to meetings like for lifers, for other groups fighting for criminal justice reform. They would speak at those meetings about me, but also about the injustice of the system. They would also join these organizations. They would share my writings. They would share my stories. So my support system was really strong. And then because of my writings and because of my advocacy on the inside of prisons, helping create a lot of the organizations that exist today in Pennsylvania, like Abolitionist Law Center, Amnesty at Law Project, the Human Rights Coalition, CADBE, the Coalition to Abolish Death by Incarceration, I was able to really extend my support network really deep into the community. So I had a really strong community support. But the reason I had that community support was because my family and my community recognized by my behavior and my actions that there was something in me to invest in, to bring the home to the community. And that's a lesson for not just people on the inside, but family members to continue to encourage your loved ones in prison to better themselves, to be looked at as an investment in the community so that when the time comes, the community will be there to support them for their release.
Well, I'm glad that you had an extreme amount of support of people that invested in you, because you're doing some amazing things, Salim. And the next question that I have for you is, what changes do you think need to be implemented with the DOC? You know, you being on both sides, being in the prison, and then also being someone that's out here working with the Abolitionist Law Center and being a major advocate for a lot of the men that were your comrades while being in prison.
So what changes? There's a tremendous amount of changes. I mean, the first step is we have to change these extreme sentences that allow people to be sentenced to life without parole and never being given the opportunity to have an opportunity for release or to go in front of the parole board and show that they're not the person they were 25, 30, 40, in some cases 50 years ago, right? So we need to end life without parole sentences. We need to end mandatory minimum sentences, mandatory sentencing. We need to end solitary confinement. You know, out of the 27 years that I spent in prison, I spent a total of 10 years in solitary confinement. The longest I spent was close to 3 years in solitary confinement. Solitary confinement is a human rights violation. It destroys your mental health. We have to end long-term supervision. We have to stop abuses within the prison system. You know, prisoners should be treated with dignity. Prisoners should be treated with respect. They should not be hundreds of miles away from their home. They should not be price gouged at the commissary, so families have to send them hundreds of dollars for food, for phone calls. Prisoners should have the right to vote. We don't believe that just because you're incarcerated, you should lose your right to vote. Our ancestors, our people fought so hard, too hard for us to be given the opportunity to vote for the state to take it. So we believe that prisoners should be given the opportunity to vote. There are a tremendous amount of issues that we need to be fighting for. We need to be fighting to make sure that politicians are not elected who are going to increase sentencing and introduce more harsher, tougher on crime sentencing. We need to ensure that they're not going to come in putting more funding for police in our community while not funding violence prevention programs, not funding mental health services for people who are dealing with mental health crisis. So we have a tremendous amount of issues that we have to continue fighting for. And you know, it's so many, and I could just keep going. I can't even name them all. But what I can do to say is that what people need to do is join these organizations. Look up the Abolitionist Law Center. Look up Human Rights Coalition. Look up Amnesty Law Project. Look up the Coalition to Abolish Death by Incarceration, CADBI. Join these organizations, become a part of these organizations, look up Straight Ahead, because that's how we're going to make a change, by family members getting involved in this fight.
You're right about that. And, you know, in terms of what you said, to spend 3 years, let alone a day in solitary confinement, has so many effects on someone's mental health. And the other thing is, people are spending years going past 3 years. Have you guys talked about reinforcing anything or getting people together to try to change that?
Absolutely. I mean, we have meetings, monthly meetings, where we bring people together. And the whole purpose of these meetings is to pass legislation, right? We got legislation in the House, in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, House Bill 135 and SB 135. We have legislation in the House to end solitary confinement. We have legislation in the House to grant voting rights to people incarcerated. We have legislation in the House for geriatric and medical parole. So that's why I encourage people to join these movements, because these movements just aren't out here advocating for loved ones on the inside. They're actually out here building the community and political power to have the laws changed, because at the end of the day, what's going to bring our loved ones home is changing the law so that they could come home.
I agree. I had a question for you. I was going to ask, because I know we always talk about, you know, somebody just getting incarcerated, but we don't talk about the backstory and how a lot of those individuals have been impacted by the system. Even prior to going into prison, were you an individual that was impacted by the system prior to being incarcerated just because of, you know, certain things taking place in the community?
I mean, certainly, yeah. My father was in and out of jail, police in and out of my house, product of poor schooling. Hell, practically every black or brown child in this country is impacted by the criminal justice system. Or we're subjected to a horrible educational system that creates a school to prison pipeline. So yeah, certainly. I mean, not only, you know, dealing with prisons, but also my family was impacted by gun violence, having lost two cousins to gun violence, right? So, you know, these issues are all interconnected within our households and within our communities.
Now, with the work that you're doing right now, because I know you're working with so many individuals, you're working with families. I also know that you have put together a group called Straight Ahead. And, you know, with that right there, they're working with people who are impacted, justice impacted individuals, people that have been impacted by being victims, dual victims, because they understand the side effects from both sides. And I know that that's something that you've been, you know, putting a lot of effort into so that people can find a safe place of healing. Can you talk a little bit about that and like what inspired the whole coalition for that?
Yeah, certainly. What inspired that was in 2018, we were on the verge of having a bill introduced to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives to make it that would provide parole eligibility to people serving life sentences. And in order for this bill to be introduced to the House floor, it had to make it through the Judiciary Committee. And we bussed hundreds of family members up to Harrisburg the night before the bill would be introduced to the floor. But then right the day before, we got word that the bill was not going to be introduced to the floor because the Victims Advocate Office pressured some of the state senators into withdrawing their support for the bill. And so the bill never made it onto the floor to be voted on or even debated. And a lot of our people and a lot of our leaders were upset about this because it was like, wait a minute, how can this Victims Advocate Office assume the right to speak for all victims? And someone in the room said, yeah, that's right, because I'm a victim too. I lost a loved one. And then other people in the room who had sons and daughters that were in prison started saying, yeah, I lost a loved one too to gun violence. And then we realized right then and there that, listen, we're all victims, right? And we're on both sides of this issue. So we decided to launch a campaign against the Victims Advocate Office, basically saying, you do not speak for our communities because you have just one profile of what a victim constitutes. However, we're victims too. Just because Miss Didi has a loved one, a son who's in prison and also lost a brother to gun violence, doesn't mean that is not a victim. She's someone that can speak as a victim and say, yeah, I want accountability, but I also want people to be released from prison. I don't want my pain and my trauma to be used for more harsher prison sentences. That's how we also connected with you and other people. So what we do with on the both sides is we make sure that we change the narrative around what a victim is and say, when it comes to violence in our community and when it comes to mass incarceration in our community, these issues, there's no wall between victims and offenders. We all know each other. We're all from the same community, and we're not going to allow a Victims Advocate Office or the district attorney or the police to divide us and act like there's a wall in the community when we all know each other, we all grew up around each other. And at the end of the day, if we're going to resolve this, we're going to resolve it with each other. So that was the whole purpose of us talking about what a dual victim is, someone that is on both sides. They got a loved one that they lost to gun violence, but they also have family members that were lost or trapped up in cycles of mass incarceration.
Well, what I appreciate is the fact that you're giving people that floor to have those conversations and also to provide like a restorative justice, because as you mentioned, myself having a loved one that's incarcerated, but then also being a person that has been on both sides of it, you know, I also feel like there needs to be a better resolution as to how we work with people, because we do have people going into the system that have different issues going on, mm-hmm. mental health. You have, you know, families that have seen a lot of violence, there's a lot of trauma, and we don't provide any type of assessment, real assessments, to help those individuals that are being incarcerated besides warehousing them. And I think that if we had more resources available while they were in there, you know, it's going to allow for better outcomes. I do want to commend you, though, Celine, for doing that, because I think it's something that in our community is needed, especially with all the trauma that is constantly being seen, whether you live in West, North Philly, South Philly. You know, there's always a little area that's, you know, just dealing with all of that trauma, and they see it more often than others. And to have a network of people that are there to support and help, because it's hard having a loved one in prison, being that support system. And it's hard being the person that's been a victim that has never received any real support. So you're doing an amazing job with that, and I really commend you on it.
Yeah, and part of it also is making sure that victims get the support that they need, right?
Definitely.
Like, it's not just about having someone go to prison. It's about, okay, what type of care do you need? You know, and that's what victims don't get in this society. And that's what we want to change, because the state doesn't want them to kill. The state just wants them to hold on to their pain so that they can continue to use these victims to uphold mass incarceration.
I agree. And the other way that I think about it, too, is that we're talking about second chances, but a lot of individuals that have been incarcerated never had a first chance to begin with.
No, I used to tell people that all the time. I was 16 years old. I ain't have no, that was the first time I went to prison, right? So, you know, for me, you know, I had never actually spent, I got arrested before, but I had never spent a night in a prison cell.
And that's hard as it is. And I mean, a lot of these things we don't really get a chance to talk about. That's why I'm glad that you're creating that platform, and I'm proud of the other organizations that are saying, you know what, these things need to change, and we need to start speaking up, and we need to come together so that we can change the system and talk to our legislators. And I know that you came home a few years ago, and you kind of went straight into work, Salim. Like, you haven't really taken a break at all. And I just want to know, like, how has that been for you? Because I know you come home and it's like you have so many other people that are still there. Like, how has that influenced your drive and your ambition in this work?
You know, I like to tell people this is what I was dreaming about when I was inside of prison, to be given the opportunity to be out here doing this work. So for me, this is a dream come true for me. And I know that I'm making an impact. And also, too, the other thing, too, is that what I'm doing out here is what I was doing on the inside, right?
Okay.
So it was just a transition from organizing in prison to organizing out here on the streets. And I knew I had to hit the ground running, because I knew a lot was depending on me. A lot of people on the inside were depending on me, but a lot of people on the outside were depending on me, because when I first came home, you know, I came home on a Tuesday. On a Wednesday, I went to the first CABI meeting that I, you know, so literally not even 24 hours home, I was at a CABI meeting family members and telling them, you know, there is hope for you. I'm free. My mother 20 years ago was sitting in a room just like you right now, meeting to organize how to get her son out of prison, you know, and it can happen. So, you know, for me, coming home, jumping right into the work, there was no other alternative.
Well, I love the fact that you jump right into the work, because you're doing some great things. And for you to be 16 years old when you got incarcerated, you spent 27 years in prison, but it also proves the fact that you weren't wasting any time even while being in there, and that you had some really, really great mentors that were teaching you lessons, because a lot of times the people that are serving life become your mentors. And you also gain some type of family while being in prison, you know, and I know that recently you had an opportunity, with all the great work that you've been doing and all your accomplishments, to meet with Martin Luther King's family. And I was telling you, I was like, I want to know, like, what was that like? Because I love Martin Luther King. He was such a great leader. And, you know, you're an example of a great leader as well.
Thanks. That was a really powerful moment because, you know, for me, Martin Luther King reading his letters from a Birmingham jail in Birmingham, Alabama, is something I did when I was in solitary confinement. And meeting with his family, actually going to Martin Luther King's memorial down D.C., for me was just a vindication of all the hard work that I put in when I was on the inside of prisons, right? And it was like, you know, this accounts for something. This means for something. But then more importantly, this is part of the legacy. This is part of the legacy of social justice. This is part of the legacy of civil rights. This is a part of the legacy of Black power. This is part of the legacy of making sure that people of color in this country are protected, respected, and have not only political power, but access to resources so that we can have whole and healthy lives. So it was a really moving and a powerful experience.
Were there other like organizations that were a part of that event?
There were formerly incarcerated people from around the country that I've worked with before. So all of them were feeling the same way too.
Oh, that's amazing. So Salim, since you came home, right, and you just went straight into work, one of the things that I wanted to know is, like, are there any type of resources that were given to you upon your release in terms of your transition? And this is for a lot of people out there because, you know, I work in the community and I'm also advocating. But at the same time, I'm also thinking that people are coming home and sometimes they're just getting back into their communities. They're not aware of certain things. It can be very frustrating. And then they have to navigate a system that they don't even know or who to go to if they didn't have support. Like, was there anything that you received in terms of support besides, you know, having the family support, but just coming back to the community?
No, not from necessarily from the system. I mean, you know, there really wasn't much out here. Parole's responsibility is not to get you a job. Parole's responsibility is not to get you a home plan or an apartment. Parole's responsibility is not to get you health care. You know, you have to set all that up yourself. So no, there wasn't. Now, I do know that Philadelphia does have reentry services. Delaware County has reentry services. So those are things that we have to make sure are funded and that we have to encourage and connect people coming home with so that they could take advantage of them.
Okay. And with the Abolitionist Law Center, how is it that someone can be referred to the Law Center? Like, is it through a family member? Is it a referral?
If you go to our website, we have a P.O. box and people could submit referrals to our P.O. box by writing us there.
Okay. And what are some of the things that you guys are currently working on? Because I know you're all over the place most of the time.
Yeah, right now we're working on litigation to end life without parole sentences. In Pennsylvania, we have a case in front of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to end second-degree felony murder. We have litigation that we're preparing that will, that if we're successful, would end the use of long-term protracted solitary confinement in Pennsylvania. We're doing work around voting rights for people incarcerated, formerly incarcerated. So we have a lot of cases, legal cases that we're doing, but we're also, you know, we do political work too, because we have a C4 that allows us to get involved in political work. So we do legislative campaigns. We support candidates that pledge to end mass incarceration. So all of these are issues that we're currently fighting against. And if you go to our website, you can see it. It's a tremendous amount. We're putting in a lot of work out here.
So the campaign that you guys are currently working on, well, you said that you have something that just went into the Supreme Court. Which one would that be?
That's the Scott case, which is a case that we're asking the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to rule that people serving second-degree murder are eligible for parole under the Pennsylvania state constitution.
Okay. And that's outside of like SB 135, right?
Yeah, yeah. That this is a case that we're doing. That's in the courts. SB 135 is in the state legislature.
Okay. Wow. So you guys got it in the Supreme Court. That's amazing.
Yeah, in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, not the United States Supreme Court.
Okay. Now, I wanted to know, like, how do you manage work and your personal life? Because you have so many different things going on. You just recently got a little beautiful baby boy, God bless him. Mm-hmm. And you're still managing to do everything else, like Superman.
Well, look, I don't believe that there's such a thing as a balance of work life and social life or personal life. It's just the decisions and choices that you make. And so for me, I just try and make decisions and choices that will give me some type of a window for downtime between work and personal life.
So, Salim, right now with the Abolitionist Law Center, are there any individuals that you guys are currently like working with besides the network of Straight Ahead?
I can't hear you.
I said, is there any other organizations that you guys are currently working with?
Oh, yeah, certainly. We work with Amnesty Law Project. We work with the Center for Constitutional Rights. We work with the Pennsylvania Institutional Law Project. We work with the Human Rights Coalition to Abolish Death by Incarceration. Sometimes we work with the Sentencing Project, Working Families Party. So we believe in coalitional power. Because that's the only way that we're going to build collective powers is working in community and coalition with other organizations that share our values.
Is there a newsletter that people can receive if they were interested in getting more information?
No, but we have a blog post on our website. So if you go to our blog post, you can see updated articles that we wrote and information that we wrote.
Okay. And is there a newsletter that goes out to people that are inside?
Yes, we do send a newsletter out to people on the inside. People can sign up for that newsletter by signing up on our website. Well, sign up for their loved ones in prison to receive that newsletter by signing up to our website.
Okay, that's amazing. So I did want to ask you, like, how do you feel like after having the experience of being in prison and then coming out here, like, do you feel like prison helped you in a sense?
Absolutely not. Prison didn't help me. It's unfortunate that black and brown boys got to go to prison to become educated in this country. So I'm not going to sit here and say because I became educated, because I, you know, was educated about political prisoners and coming home and doing the work, that prison was helpful. No, I wish I didn't have to go to prison for that, right?
Definitely.
We don't want people to go to prison. So for me, nothing good came out of prison. There was no need for me to spend, and there's not need for many people to spend 27 years, 30 years, 25 years in prison, right? So for me, that's why I believe that prisons need to be abolished, and that as a community, particularly as a community, we need to come up with alternative ways of holding people accountable who harm other people besides just dealing with prisons and police.
If we could redesign what the prison system looks like from your point of view, what would that be like?
I mean, that's a good question. And I mean, I don't have all the answers, but I definitely would want to see more emphasis on community, serving the community as a consequence of like harming someone from the community, as opposed to being pulled from it and being separated from the community. You know, restitution, restorative justice practices. So those are some things I would like to see as an alternative. But I also would like to see more investment in the youth, more investment in their education, more investment in better opportunities for jobs, because people who have good jobs, people who have good education, don't harm each other. It's only poor people. If you look all around the world, the communities that have the highest rates of violence are the poorest communities, because those communities are fighting for scraps and harming each other. It's not the communities that have resources, that have jobs. So what we need to do is have funding in our community so we're not fighting and killing each other over the scraps like that are happening in black and brown neighborhoods.
Have you thought about having anything that would be available for the community? Because I do believe in the same thing. I know that when you come from a community of violence, a lack of education, when you're coming from a community that there's no jobs that are paying good money, people are going to resort to crime and trying to survive.
Totally. Well, this is where we have to seize political power, because that's how we have to funnel the resources from the state, the resources that are ours, right? Back Definitely. Into our community to create these jobs, to create better conditions for jobs. But also, ultimately, look, let's be straight. Prisons and police are not like an anomaly in America. The ultimate problem is American society. So we are definitely going to need to change not just police and prisons, but we're going to need to transform this whole society, because working class people and poor people get dogged out every day. There's, you know, meanwhile, corporations and billionaires, you know, essentially get all the funding, right? They get bailed Definitely. Out all the time, but we never get bailed out. We never get help. Poor people and working class people.
I wanted to know, like, from your perspective, like, how does it feel now that you're home?
It feels great. There's no other word. Like, I don't even need to go too deep into that. I mean, freedom is a natural condition of human beings. And as soon as I got out of the prison, I felt great. I felt happy to have to be able to move on. I'm not going to say put it behind me, but able to move on. And live free.
I know that you stay connected to a lot of people that are inside. Like, how does that feel? Because I know they look up to you, Salim. A lot of those men and women too, they're looking up to you because you're doing amazing things. And I just want to point out the fact that people that do come home are doing amazing things, and they're giving back to their communities, and they're trying to do things in a powerful way that makes changes.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels great. And I mean, I don't do this for the accolades, right? But to know that I'm inspiring other people is great, because, you know, I was inspired by people that came home before me, right? I was inspired by people that paved the way for me to be doing this work. So it feels good.
Can we also talk about the fact that people don't recidivize after being in prison for so many years?
Don't what?
They don't go back to prison.
No, they don't. People who have been in prison for decades have the lowest recidivism rates of any population. So yeah, that's something that we need to be lifting up as activists and advocates when we're talking about criminal justice reform.
Are there any point of contacts within your organization that people can connect with? Is it listed on the site? Is it listed on the Instagram? Or do they got to contact the PO box? Because I know that you guys have these new, workshops. You guys are trying to do like an event with the healing of the community, and it's going to resort in having like people who have been impacted by the system, so that we can try to like work towards a restorative and transformative justice.
No, we don't have anyone specifically. If you go there, there's like a form that you fill out, and then someone will contact you and invite you to the event.
You have an event that's coming up in April.
I believe we do, and it should be on the website. I'm not 100% sure which event that is, but if it's on the website, that's the event, and I would encourage people to go to it. I believe it's an event dealing with lobbying for people who are incarcerated.
One thing I want to make mention of is that in order for us to make any changes, we need to talk to these legislators. We need to let them know like how we're feeling, because at the end of the day, they're supposed to represent us as a community. So, you know, there's been times where we're going to Harrisburg and we're speaking to legislators and we're telling them like, listen, I've been affected by this, but I also don't feel as though somebody should stay incarcerated for the rest of their lives, especially when they've been progressing and working on themselves. And One thing that I do want to mention is that you talked about your progression while being in prison. And that's a thing that a lot of people out in the community are unaware of. And it's really hard when people are trying to get paroled when they've been at different like facilities or there's no record that really reflects their performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why one thing, you know, we have to continue to meet these legislators, but also like I tell prisoners all the time, like you have to make sure that you write your own story, that you keep your own records and the family members do so. I encourage people to create their own stories, create their own records. That way you won't be totally dependent upon the prison to write it for you.
I believe in that as well. That's why we need more advocates. We need you, if you have a loved one that's in prison, to speak up, you know, come to these meetings that take place with the Coalition Against Death by Incarceration, with Amistad Law Project, Abolitionist Law Center. You know, there's so many different organizations that are working towards bills, changing policies. And, you know, even the changes that are taking place with the DOC that need to be made, because it's affecting people that are inside and they're human just like us. Just because they're incarcerated, I don't feel like they're any different. And they deserve an opportunity to, you know, show and prove that they have made productive changes. One thing that I did want to ask you is, like, you know, during this show, we have what's called a jail call. And basically what we do is we allow, you know, the person that's coming on the show or myself to do like a jail call, which is a 15 minute call of action, because, you know, if you're locked up, you only got 15 minutes to talk on the phone. But what we want is for people to become as educated as possible and to learn about the things that are taking places with different organizations, and what changes you guys are trying to make or things that you guys are trying to implement. So I wanted to know, like, you know, being as though you're on the show today, if you can talk to our audience and give them something to like take with them so that they can learn about, you know, research or be a part of when it comes to Abolitionist Law Center talking about Straight Ahead and the work that they're doing and Amistad Law Project.
I mean, the first thing I would encourage people is to follow us if they're on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter. Abolitionist Law Center on Twitter, we're Toward Abolition and Abolitionist Law Center. I would also encourage people to visit our websites because you can find out more information about our work there. But then if you're in Philly or if you're in Pittsburgh, then join some of our events. Come out to our events. Look on our website. We have a calendar of events. And so people can go to those, look at that calendar and see what events are going on. But then also connect with you. Connect with CABI members. Connect with the Human Rights Coalition, because this is what will plug you into this work. This is what will plug you into this movement, so that you could stay attuned, abreast of what's going on.
Definitely. And I appreciate that. Are there any new bills or any support that you need on your end that you want these individuals out here listening to support you on? Any call of actions, any campaigns?
No, I would just, again, encourage people to follow the campaigns on our websites, stay in touch with people like you and listen to you, so that they could stay in tune with what's going on and they could connect to our movement.
I also want to mention, because I know we had this event yesterday and Helen Gim was there, and she's definitely a powerhouse. She's trying to become the next mayor of Philadelphia, and she is amazing. Her focus is coming into these communities and having conversations with the people that live in that community, to focus on bringing better resources and making changes, productive changes that we have lacked for a really long time, if anyone's aware and lives in these communities. But she was at this event yesterday, and, you know, I just wanted to know, what do you think about her being someone that's trying to go for mayor?
I mean, we need someone like that who's not going to allow the clock to be turned back to the days of mass incarceration, lock them up, throw away the key, more police, because that hasn't worked. That has only harmed our communities. If that worked, we would have the safest neighborhoods in the world, because we have more prisons, we have more people in prisons, and we spend more money on prisons and police than any other country in the world. So it's good to have a candidate who says, I'm not going to try and do old things that haven't worked. I'm interested in exploring new things that will work, as well as evaluating present things that work to make our communities more safe.
I definitely agree. I got a chance to meet her. She's amazing. She's also going to be on DBI Live today with Suave Gonzalez and Kevin McCracken. So I can't wait to hear the information that she's going to give out and how that interview is going to take place at 5 o'clock today, actually. But one thing that I do want to say is that I really commend you, Salim, on all the work that you're doing, not for just people that are incarcerated, but for victims. I remember meeting with you about 3 years ago, and you and me sat down in a cafe, and I was just telling you, like, listen, I want to get involved in this work, and I'm committed. I remember you told me it's a sprint, not a marathon.
Yes.
And
you mean it's a marathon? Wait, I told you it's a sprint, not a marathon, or a marathon, not a sprint?
I think you said a marathon, not a sprint, maybe.
Yeah, no doubt. Although it sometimes can feel like a sprint.
So. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, I knew from that day forth, I was like, you know, you were serious about the work. And I also knew that I was going to be seriously committed to the work as well. But, you know, please stay in contact with Salim, with myself, if you're interested in becoming an advocate for someone that you know who's incarcerated. If you have been a person that has been a victim and is looking for a place of healing, this is the place to get information and to find a support group that's going to be there for you, because sometimes we don't have that support, and people that are incarcerated don't have that support either. And what I love most about the work is that you're trying to bring people together and restore the system that has been broken. It's been broken, but it can always be put back together in a whole different way, in an even better way. So I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show. And, you know, I'm really proud of the amazing work that you're doing, and I know you're going to continue doing it. And thank you again. Jail Talk will be back on next Friday at 4 p.m. Up next, we have Suave Gonzalez with DBI Live, Helen Gim. She's amazing. Please make sure that you listen and make sure that you vote for her.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Lay down, body, lay down a little while. Oh, body, lay down a little while. Lay down your brother, lay down a little while. Oh, body. Lay down a little while. I know you're tired. Lay down a little while. You inspired. Lay down, body. Lay down a little while. Body, lay down. Oh, soul and body. Lay down a little while. 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 You inspired. Lay down a little while. 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 Lay down a little while.
Slave to the block, on a respray shots, leaving our own to lay in the box, black mother's stomach.